In the debate at the Capitol over the state budget, there is widespread agreement about giving a cost of living raise to New Yorkers working at human services nonprofits that contract with the state. And while quote-unquote human services represents a wide array of nonprofits providing a variety of different care, it doesn't catch all the direct services provided to vulnerable New Yorkers. For more on this gap, we're joined by Denise Figueroa, Executive Director at the Independent Living Center of the Hudson Valley. Welcome to the show, Denise.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And also with us is Becky Prevey, Executive Director for the Association on Aging in New York. Welcome back to the program, Becky.
Thanks, David.
So on this program in the past, we've highlighted the fight over a cost of living adjustment for direct care workers at nonprofits that contract with the state and the push between the governor's 1.5% proposed bump and the legislature's 3.2% increase. But we haven't paid much attention to the fact that other workers who we might generally think of as part of the human services sector are actually excluded from this debate. So can you guys talk a little about who these workers are and the services that they provide?
We work at the Independent Living Center here in the Capital District, the Independent Living Center of the Hudson Valley, but there are 41 independent living centers across New York State. And they're all organizations that are run by and for people with disabilities. And we provide community-based services. So we have many staff that are out there providing help with people finding accessible housing, doing peer counseling, helping people with benefits advisement, moving people out of institutional settings and into the community, helping people with educational and employment goals. Because we are under the State Education Department, we are not included in the cost of living adjustments that have been in place for a number of years. So the centers never receive a COLA.
And what is the ramification of that for your members, Denise?
The ramification is that the needs grow every year, and particularly through COVID and the pandemic, there's been a huge demand on services for people, whether it's just help with getting food or equipment and, you know, just staying independent in the community. And without being able to give cost of living adjustments to our staff, it's very hard to retain staff. So we end up with huge staff turnover and the inability to be able to provide services to people.
And why is this an issue for your network, Becky?
So it's a huge issue. And as you know, David, I represent the 59 offices for the aging throughout the state. And we co-operate a very vital program with the independent living centers called the New York Connects program. And if any of you have ever tried to access long-term care services and supports, you know, it's very, very difficult. In the state of New York, we have the New York Connects program, which is really a trusted place to go for free, unbiased information about long-term services and supports in the state. And that program is for people of all ages or with any type of disability. What we know is that my network are really the experts in all things aging. We know that the independent living centers are experts in the disability service network. So we actually co-provide the New York Connects program to make sure anyone that reaches out is getting objective, independent information by the subject matter experts. And again, unfortunately, the independent living centers are continually faced with the fact that they don't receive the COLA adjustment. We also see that through our New York Connects program, and the staff that are providing these services really need to be provided those wage adjustments, or we're going to lose them to other sectors.
Well, in the debate that's happening right now at the Capitol over the cost of living adjustment for human services workers, the context is hundreds of millions of dollars that the state would have to pony up for the additional wages. But in this workforce that we're talking about right now, how big of a price tag would it be to lump, say, the independent living center staff into the cost of living adjustment conversation?
I'm actually not sure exactly what it would be. You know, our whole statewide budget for independent living is only, I think it's $16.5 million. You know, we're not our programs are very poorly funded to begin with. So a rate increase is not going to be a significant impact in terms of money for the state.
I would also argue to that point, you're looking at a small fiscal for the independent living centers. But again, we talk a lot about return on investment. And so the work done at the ILC level, whether it's getting somebody durable medical equipment that their insurance doesn't cover, or assisting someone in coming out of a skilled nursing facility, the ILCs are saving hundreds of millions of dollars on the Medicaid side by providing these vital services in the community. So the small fiscal that the state would have to invest to retain and recruit staff at the ILC level more than pays for itself in the long term, not only from a fiscal perspective, but also from a human service interest for people that really need to access services.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to get at with the question, because we're debating a budget that's worth more than $230 billion. And this is just a fraction of that broader human services workforce. So does it seem like the people that we're discussing are excluded purposefully? Because it's not like including them would break the bank.
I would hope that's not the intention, David, but I think when we look at where funding goes and where people are being left out, it's really people with disabilities and it's people that are aging. And I think it's an unfortunate misstep by government not to invest in, you know, the almost 5 million people over the age of 60 and the 4.1 million caregivers that touch our service infrastructure, which makes up almost half of the population of the state of New York, yet gets a tiny fiscal component of the overall New York state budget.
Yeah, Denise, you highlighted the low level of investment that the independent living centers routinely get in New York. So in addition to the cost of living adjustment, are there other avenues of funding that you'd like the state to invest in this year that could really make a difference for your centers and the vulnerable populations that you serve?
Well, yes, there's the Open Doors program that the New York Association on Independent Living operates. And that program is a program that's specific to transitioning people out of nursing homes or institutional settings into the community. And that program is funded through the health department. It's funded with some federal funds. Money follows the person is what it's referred to. That program, as well as housing subsidies and the access to home program, are programs that wouldn't directly necessarily affect the centers, but would make it possible for more people to be living in the community. Housing and home care are the two barriers, the biggest barriers to being able to live independently in the community. And that's really where the investment needs to be, and it's all related to long-term care. Those are all important investments that the state needs to be making. Wages for home care workers is just abominable. You know, you can get more money working at McDonald's or a fast food chain than you can trying to provide very personal services to people with disabilities and seniors.
And I would just underline to Denise's point, we have talked for decades about the home care workforce issue, and it hasn't been resolved since it was raised in the early 1980s. And I think that that's a reflection of what we value in the state of New York and the fact that over half of direct care professionals are dependent on public service benefits. Right. Is really telling to what we care about. And there is no way for the state to have a long-term care infrastructure if we don't address the home care worker crisis and the changes that are being proposed every legislative cycle to cuts to the consumer-directed program and not providing home care workers a living wage, I think is something that is going to really undo any wins that we make in our long-term care infrastructure, because we have to have staff to support people.
Well, Becky, when we spoke earlier in this budget season, you had a real message of doom and gloom based on the governor's budget proposal. I'm curious how you're thinking about this budget now that we've heard from the legislature and the ball has moved down the field, so to speak.
I mean, we're pleased with our colleagues in the Senate and Assembly and the additions that they have looked to place in the New York State Office for the Aging budget. But collectively, the advocate community, the disability community are overwhelmingly disappointed in the fact that we've spent a year working on a master plan for aging, which is supposed to be a 10-year long roadmap, not only for the current older population, but people with disabilities and people that are aging. And to consistently have a New York State Office for the Aging budget that comes in less than 0.8% of the overall state budget is really telling that we don't value the older population in the state of New York. And David, we've referenced this before. Older people pay $72 billion a year in state and local taxes. They're almost 43% of the tax base. And we continue to refuse to invest in the infrastructure that serves people with disabilities and serves people as they age.
So Denise, Becky mentioned the master plan for aging, which is not really something that is unique solely to older New Yorkers. This is something that it will impact New Yorkers with disabilities. So is this an issue that you're watching closely as well?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I serve on a couple of the subcommittees for the Master Plan on Aging. It's not just for seniors. You know, we are aging from birth, and we acquire disabilities and long-term care supports at different points in our life. And so, if we're not planning for that and planning for smooth transition into senior ages, we're not going to be able to keep people in the community where they want to be. Nobody wants to move into a nursing home. You know, it's not your goal in life to, you know, you don't think about, well, I'm going to work and then I'm going, and then I'm going to retire and go into the nursing home. You know, but if we don't put things in place, if we don't have accessible housing for people, and if we don't have home care workers and we don't have support systems in place, people do end up there, and it's not where anybody wants to be. It's not where their family members want them to be. So it's very important that we be all working together on these issues, and it's why I'm involved. It's why other folks with disabilities have been involved in this process as well.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. My thanks to Denise Figueroa, Executive Director at the Independent Living Center of the Hudson Valley. I appreciate you making the time, Denise.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And we've also been speaking with Becky Prevey, Executive Director for the Association on Aging in New York. Thanks again, Becky.
Thanks, David.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Resorts World New York. With over 1 million square feet of space to play, relax, and celebrate, Resorts World New York City hosts more than 5 million visitors a year. That makes Resorts World a significant social and economic partner for local businesses and residents alike. Through its operations and outreach programs, Resorts World has generated more than $4 billion for the state educational system and 1,400 jobs for the people of Queens. More information at rwnewyork.com.